Well, here's what I say. If Congressman Jeff Duncan can find his way to our station and the Antique Vintager Emporium, and he usually never drives, and he still found his way here, God bless it. Everybody else should be too. Right, Jeff?
That's right. If I would have just looked at the address, it would have been easier. But I was trying to think, how did we go before? I never drive, so I really didn't pay attention. And we always come from downtown.
Right.
I was coming from Clinton. It was different.
It was, so. Yes. So you've been traveling around the district and seeing different parts. how's the mood in the district?
Well, it's summertime, and a lot of folks on vacation, but very optimistic out there. People like what they're seeing in the economy. They like having more money in their paycheck. They like what the president's doing for the most part. And, you know, we've been in Anderson, Pickens, Oconee, Lawrence, Greenwood, Greenville County so far this week.
Wow. So you've been moving around.
That's right.
Moving around, yeah. So, in fact, you're going to be here today at luncheon, Uptown Greenwood, for the Hill Talk.
Yeah, for the Chamber of Commerce, and looking forward to that, sharing some things with that's what's going on in Washington with folks here in Greenwood. It's always great to be in Greenwood, and unfortunately, I was in Greenwood late last night. My youngest son broke down in Kirksey. On 25, on the side of the road, truck overheated. He and his girlfriend were going down get some chocolate milk at a Vendamoo somewhere. Anyway, he calls me at 9 o'clock. I'm in Lawrence. I've got to drive down. Even we have AAA, so he called them. I told him, call AAA. They came and towed his truck, took it to Clinton for us.
Left him on the side of the road. I'm just teasing.
But then, you know, they didn't get there until after I got there. But we had to drive from Clinton, from Lawrence, where I live, all the way to Kirksey, pick them up, wait on the tow truck. They brought the wrong tow truck for the size tires he had, so they had to wait on another tow truck, but we left it with the tow driver. And I saw the truck at the mechanics this morning, so it did make it to Clinton. But anyway, pick them up, drive from Kirksey to Hodges, drop his girlfriend off, and then all the way back to Lawrence, almost cross anchor where I live. About 160 miles. I got home after midnight last night, after being up at 5 yesterday morning to get to Oconee Alliance up in Westminster, or up in Walhalla. So, yeah, it was a long day.
It was a long day. Well, you know, that of course, you're speaking about Parker, and I remember when you went to Washington, we were there for your swearing-in ceremony and everything, and I have pictures of Parker sitting at the front desk there inviting people in, and he was a little, how old was he? 7, 8,
oh,
9,
golly,
something like
that? Was 8 years ago. He would have been 10,
yeah.
9. Yeah.
And what a change.
He was our
that.
First staff assistant, answering the phone and greeting folks as they came in. He had on his little white shirt and tie, I remember.
Yeah.
And it's been 8 years, and those boys have grown up. Graham's 23 and in graduate school and just got engaged to a girl from Callison and that goes to Lander. And then my middle son finished Tri-County Tech this year with an engineering technology degree, zero student loan debt, and has a great job in Anderson with TTI, so right out of college. And then Parker will be a senior this year. So
yeah, wow. So growing up.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, and that's the thing about kids. It makes you feel, you feel your age because you see them growing up.
Well, the downside is I've missed a lot of their lives, you know, ball games and other life events by being away in Washington and around the world. But sacrifices we make to serve our country because we love this nation so much.
So, speaking of our country and everything, you know, every day on the news, we are bombarded by the angst and how things are working and the anger and everything else that is going on up there. How are things going in Washington, D.C.?
First off, why are people in America angry? Because GDP is over 4%. We have low unemployment.
You know, he's not the president.
We have more Americans working than ever. We have very low African-American unemployment, very low Hispanic unemployment, very low female unemployment. folks are working, the less people are drawing benefits off the government. Revenues to the government are actually up, and had two record high months of revenues flowing in the government because of tax reform. We've got money earned overseas by American companies coming back to this nation and being reinvested to create even more jobs. We got the technical colleges busting at the seams.
I was talking about Washington, D.C. and all the crap we see coming out of there,
yeah.
Jeff.
Well, it's driven by the mainstream media, and yeah.
Well, is it that way? That's
no.
What my question is. Is it that way? Are the congressmen and the senators literally almost at each other's throats?
No. Unless you're Maxine Waters inciting violence against elected officials around the country like she did. Unless it's me challenging Paul Ryan to do something about her vitriol that incited violence. Asking him to do something. You know what he did? He just asked her to apologize. Well, there ought to be a censure for that. There ought to be some. So, yeah, I've challenged Paul Ryan on that. Maxine's been out there inciting violence around the country against politicians. As somebody that was on an assassin's list and at the baseball field and talked to the shooter that targeted members of a certain party because he disliked their politics and tried to kill him shooting 137 times, I told Paul Ryan, I don't have a security detail like you guys do. I was on an assassin's list, and I ask you to put a stop to Maxine Waters and her incitement of violence. And so
she's the one that said get out there.
But you know, the in Washington we get along. I mean, we disagree on politics. You get in front of a camera, maybe there's some vitriolness that comes out of your mouth, but on their side, not the ones that I see on our side. But end of the day, we're working on legislation. We're plugging away, and we're trying to use our majority on the House side to pass good policy for the nation. Now, the Senate still takes 60 votes for general legislation, and the Republicans only have 51, and you can get a gridlock over there.
Well, it just seems to me that even though there is a lot going on, it seems that you are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. It seems like there still is a lot of anger going back and forth. This thing about the upcoming midterms, people really are trying to spin everything every way. Did the Republicans win the other day? It appears so, basically across the board, but
think,
in the media.
I think so, too. These were there were some primary elections, but then there were some special elections as well, and it looks like Republicans have won that. That's 1450 AM WCRS, by the way. I'm kidding. I've always wanted to do that.
Well, all right.
And I want to do baseball on the radio.
Okay.
I want to announce a baseball game on the radio.
Okay.
That's one of my bucket list items, but I don't know if y'all do sports or not. But
We do Clemson, and we do Emerald right
here. Well, Don Munson wants me to come get in the box with him at Clemson. He's offered, and I just got to take him up on that. And it's 0-2 count against So it's all about control, and Democrats want to take control of one of the bodies in Congress, either the Senate or the House. I don't see how they can win the Senate with the races that are out there. They probably will lose seats on the Senate side. On the House side, they've got to swing about 30 votes in order to make Nancy Pelosi the Speaker and Maxine Waters the Chairman of Financial Services, which is a scary sight for a lot of people around the country. You thought Dodd-Frank was bad on the banking industry. Wait until you get the Waters bill. That's coming out of financial services if she's chairwoman and they have control that would really restrict banking once again. And so we now see the financial industry have at least some flexibility to make the loans that are necessary, putting capital out there to meet the economic growth that we're seeing, to allow small businesses and large to actually grow. And so it's all about trying to take over one of those chambers and ultimately to stop the president's agenda. They want to stop making America great again. In fact, here's what it looks like if Nancy Pelosi becomes Speaker of the House, that they reverse tax reform. That means your taxes go up. They stop rebuilding our nation's military. It was decimated under sequestration. President Trump and Republicans have actually put a lot of money there to start building more ships and airplanes and working on safety and readiness and training so that we don't have planes fall out of the sky and well-trained pilots die because of it, and actually be able to thwart and stop the aggression around the globe. They would roll that back. Dodd-Frank, I mentioned earlier, more stringent and restrictive financial policy on banks would happen. You're going to see government spending go up where we've tried to control control government spending. We're $22 trillion in debt. Republicans have done a terrible job addressing that, but Democrats are definitely not going to address it. Obamacare will be added to, not dismantled, the way we've seen. And I think that's attributed to the economy as well, just a rollback of the, some of the restrictions like the individual mandate. So if Democrats take control of one of the bodies, then all the economic activity, the positive things going on in the country will come to a screeching halt. And I don't think America wants that.
Well, you know, you're saying if Nancy Pelosi ends up with the gavel back there in the House again, you know, from what I hear, Nancy Pelosi isn't the person they seem to want. That, you know, everybody, the question everybody seems to be sidestepping, if you get elected, would you want Nancy Pelosi?
I've been up there for 8 years. I can tell you that a more moderate Democrat cannot win because in the last time they had the leader race over there, not a speaker's race, I talked to some of my colleagues on the Democrat side, and they said that, you know, the more progressive liberals will not vote for anyone else. So you're either going to have Nancy or you're going to have somebody to the left of her. And that in itself is scary. I don't know who that would be. Keith Ellison's leaving. Who could garner the 218 votes that they would need to elect a speaker? I believe Nancy's still got the juice.
Well, you know, speaking of the upcoming, of course, Paul Ryan is leaving, and now we do have Jim Jordan, who has said he wants to be speaker. How would you be with Jim Jordan for speaker?
I would love Jim Jordan to be speaker. Now, he's got to show me he can get 218 votes as well. He's actually got to call me. Jim, if you're listening, you have to call me and ask me for my support. Don't take me for granted, which I'm afraid you are doing. I'm a member of the Freedom Caucus. Jim Jordan would be a great speaker, and we'd see a change in things in Washington. But that's not to say that Kevin McCarthy wouldn't be a great speaker as well. Kevin's close to the president. They speak daily. Kevin has been a great friend of mine and really the whole delegation here in South Carolina since we got there. He is a great fundraiser. He's a great communicator. So there's a lot of positives. Now, we'll say he's been part of the leadership team, and there's been a lot of negatives too, because I've been, you know, kind of antagonistic with the leadership team on the way things have gone over the last 8 years. And of course, I didn't vote for John Boehner, and Eric Cantor left, and et cetera. But I think Kevin's probably different. But there again, I felt that way about Paul Ryan too. I felt Paul was an honest broker, and he's let me down in so many ways as well. And I'd tell him if he was sitting there. We can agree or we can disagree. But at the end of the day, we got to make sure we maintain the House majority in order to even have a voice in the speaker's race. And once we maintain the majority, then we'll elect a new speaker for the next Congress, and we'll look at the candidates. I, as your congressman, will look at the candidates that are out there, and I'll try to pick one that I think can move the House, working with the president, moving in the right direction to keep this economy and keep this country on track, where I think we're back on the right rails now, because I like a strong military. I like us becoming the superpower that the world needs us to be. I like the economy, you know, humming along like it is. I like great GDP growth. I love low unemployment. I love folks that are actually working and providing for themselves versus drawing down a benefit from the government. There's value in earning your own way versus getting a perpetual handout. I like what I see in there. I like folks in my district having more money in the paycheck. 90% of all Americans saw bigger paychecks and got a benefit from the tax cut. They are spending that money in the economy. I would rather them keep doing that, and that's what I want to see. So I want to make sure that the next speaker is willing to work with the president and with us to make sure we got good conservative policy that we continue to keep America on these rails.
Well, we, you know, so far so good. But as far as President Trump is concerned, he doesn't get a lot of kudos unless he's in a rally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the rallies are big.
Yeah.
And that shows you the heartland of America believes in what he's doing. It's the mainstream media that doesn't seem to agree with what he's doing. Now, he could say things better. He could do better press conferences in Helsinki. I get all that. But he also said anybody can be presidential. They can stand up. I don't know if you saw him.
Yeah, right.
You know,
of course.
On the stage.
Yeah.
And he's right in a lot of ways. America didn't elect. We had a lot of great choices of polished politicians up there.
Right.
I'm talking about people that were polished, that said things the right way with the right inflection. Donald Trump wasn't one of those. Donald Trump says things like maybe the guy next door says it. And that's why they seem to gravitate toward him. He's willing to challenge our allies. He's willing to challenge our adversaries to try to make America safer, to you know, help our allies lessen their dependence on Russia for energy, to challenge them to pay more of their fair share, because we helped them with their emerging economies for so long, but we've carried the burden of the cost of our mutual defense. It's now for them with their emerging economies and success to step up and pay more. That helps us because that's less of our tax dollars going to pay for that mutual defense. And that's not just NATO, that's Japan as well. So people are in the heartland, and people in the third district, and they appreciate that because that's what they've been thinking all along. You know, Germany's got a great economy. Why are they paying less as a percentage of their GDP than Greece, who has a floundering economy and a lot of financial troubles, pays more as a percentage of their GDP than Germany does? Why is Germany buying gas from Putin? Why is Germany buying gas from Russia and giving those dollars to Putin and propping him up when they can look west and we can provide the natural gas? We've got a robust energy renaissance going on in this country, natural gas. We can provide them all the gas they need. It benefits American industry. It benefits our energy sector, but it also benefits our allies.
And but then you come down to the sanctions, and there's a lot of, I think we just had a TV company close here in South Carolina because they're not able to get the parts to be able to build TVs. They were one of the only companies that were actually building TVs here in the United States. Yeah. China seems to be getting jumping in and deciding on sanctions. We've got tariffs. And the other thing is, of course, we got car companies here. So what do you think about the tariffs?
So first off, I would ask you to look at the news today. There's some discrepancy on the TV company and why they ultimately are laying off and closing. And so I would ask you to investigate that. I heard some snippets on the radio. I need to do a little more reading before I comment about that. But I would ask you to do that. Lower margin companies like that, they make really low margin, low cost TVs. Their margins are very tight. So anytime you have an incident in the marketplace, whether it's a tariff or whatnot, rising interest rate environment can do the same thing. The companies that have smaller margins are the sure. ones that are hit first.
Sure.
So they can't weather some of that. Now, you don't see BMW laying off. There's a bunch of fake news out there. They're actually expanding at the BMW plant in Spartanburg. And, yeah, they're building a plant in China, but that's closer to an emerging market over there. People that will purchase a certain type vehicle. They don't buy the same vehicles in other parts of the world, ladies and gentlemen, that we buy here. They're different models. You go and you go, wow, I like the look of that car. Why can't I buy that in the U.S.? No, that was built for this market over here. So they were thinking about that long before the tariffs. Now, I'm not saying that I'm fully supportive of the tariff. I'm kind of agnostic right now, because when I see Trump impose tariffs on the European Union and I immediately see the head of the European Union haul butt to Washington for a meeting at the White House about those, that tells me Trump got their attention.
Right.
So the effect was positive. And when I see China doing some things initially because of the tariffs that actually opened up some markets, then I say maybe it's having a positive effect. But the longer this is drawn out, and these are relatively new tariffs. These are in their infancy.
Yes.
So as it draws out and we don't see those countries come to the negotiating table and work on leveling the playing field, and we continue to see China manipulate its currency and dump goods in the market, which we've seen, then I'll probably take a position that will be anti-tariff, because I don't think tariffs in the long run are the right thing. But ladies and gentlemen, American goods have had tariffs imposed on them as they're sold in foreign markets. We've been in a trade war my whole lifetime. We just haven't been fighting that trade war. Our American-made goods have been shut out of these emerging marketplaces because they've had tariffs in place as a protection measure for goods made in Germany or Japan or other places. And so we allowed it to go on because we, as a prosperous nation, were helping those economies emerge. But guess what? They have emerged. China's got a huge economy. Germany's done very, very well. These other countries. So now it's time for them to drop their tariffs and allow American-made goods to have access to their consumers while also allowing their goods to have access to American consumers with a level playing field. But our goods have been shut out. At the same time, they've demanded us not to have tariffs so that their goods can be sold here and compete with American products made here when they're paying a lot lower wages and whatnot. So we'll see if this negotiator, President Trump, who is very successful, can be successful in this. So far, he's been successful in everything that he's put forward on the economy and jobs and taxes and all that. We'll see about this.
You know, you were a businessman before you got actually into politics, per se. It right. is a different approach, isn't it, than what we've seen in Washington, this businessman's approach, the business tactics. I think a lot of business people can sit there and understand what he's doing a lot better than all the politicians that we have in Washington.
I think a lot of them do. I was with Borg Warner up in Seneca yesterday. They make transfer cases for, you know, Ford and Chrysler and Toyota. Mainly trucks up there, and great company. I've visited them 3 times since I've been in Congress, and they have aluminum and steel products within their, you know, whether it's the housing is aluminum, the inside are steel, gears and whatnot, transfer the power, and tariffs on aluminum and steel will affect them.
Right.
But our conversation yesterday, yes, they're concerned. Yes, they told me how it's affecting their bottom line, but they also understand that leveling the playing field. Maybe it would open up markets for their transfer cases to be put on Chinese vehicles or more European cars, where they're maybe shut out of those markets or have to open up overseas operations in order to have access to those markets. So they weren't what I thought when I went in. I said, guys, I know you want to talk about tariffs. Really wasn't the 100% gist of what they're doing. They were talking about job creation, investment there, and what they're doing to grow that industry in Seneca, et cetera, et cetera. It wasn't as negative as I thought it was going to be. We did talk about tariffs, and they were sort of like me. We're in a wait and see. We have an idea where we want it to be that'll benefit our company. Mm-hmm. But we also understand we have to look beyond our company and look at the whole marketplace, look at the whole U.S. economy, kind of try to understand what the president's doing. And they had a business-like approach. I think that's what you were saying a minute ago. And it actually was refreshing. But at the same time, I told them, if these tariffs are having a negative impact on your company long-term, let me know and we'll do what we can. Now, I will say this. Within the tariffs that are out there, there are exclusions, especially for raw materials and for products. And so we've been able to work with companies in this district with the Department of Commerce to help them get the exclusions. I'll give you a case in point. There's a company in Seneca that makes machine tools, high-end drill bits, if you can think about it like that, that are machining the housings at BorgWarner or the rifle barrels at FN in Columbia. So they use a really hard steel for that. And they turn a block of steel into a drill bit. Mm-hmm. That's very, very sharp and very, very strong. Well, that hard steel, there's only 25% capacity made in the United States. For all the people that use hard steel, U.S. suppliers can only provide 25% of that. So they have to import a lot of that hard steel. A lot of it comes from China. Guess what? It's got a tariff imposed on it. But they still need that. So we've been able to help them get an exclusion because that raw material we can't make here. So they bring it in, keep the jobs here in this country, and then turn that raw material into a drill bit that can be marketed and sold around the world. Now, those drill bits are subject to tariffs as well, the machine tools. So we've been able to work with them, with the Department of Commerce, to help level the playing field for that company. And 70% of all the tariff exclusions under that section have gone to that company in Seneca, South Carolina, because of our efforts. We're going to continue to do that. If we see the impact, we're going to continue to step up and do what we can because we want the jobs here. We want these companies to be successful. We want them to continue paying taxes in Greenwood County, South Carolina.
Sure, absolutely. And you know, and but then there's the other part. What about the farmers, Jeff?
So the farmers, agriculture, I mean, the president has authorized some subsidies for that. I don't believe in subsidies long term, but I understand to kind of level out some of the initial impact. But here's the thing, and I talked to the delegations in New York and North Dakota and the northern states. Canada has not allowed any dairy products to be sold in Canada without 127% tariff, I think it is, on there. They've basically shut American farmers, dairy farmers, access to the Canadian market to protect the Canadian dairy farmers. That's not just raw milk or processed milk. That's cheese and that's other dairy products. If you can think dairy, if it's in there, it's been shut out because of a tariff of the Canadian market. So President Trump, and then in that one area, has said, that's not fair. we've got dairy farms in Vermont and New York, upper New York State, that could sell to those Canadian cities, but you guys are shutting us out. So we want to level that playing field as well, because I believe American farmers and American manufacturers, American businesses can compete with Canadian businesses as long as the playing field's level. Why is it okay, Anne, for Canada to impose a 127% tariff on goods coming from the U.S., but it's not okay when the U.S. says we're going to impose a tariff on Canadian goods coming in the U.S. We're going to protect our guys just like you're protecting yours, and if you want us to change that, you need to change as well. Let's level, and you guys, I got my hands going down here. Let's level this playing field, and then I believe, and I think the president does as well, that American businesses, American farmers, and others can compete with anybody around the globe for quality, for quantity, and for price.
Sure, but it's in the short term that some of our farmers, I understand, could be, because they have to be making up their minds what they're doing for next year.
Right, well,
yeah, and that's okay. that's the rub, I think.
In this district, my farmers are more concerned about having access to labor. You know, they're more worried about immigration and H-2A, H-2B visas. We see more cotton being planted and growing this year in South Carolina because the cotton market's strong globally. That tells me the economy is doing well. People are buying good shirts and clothes and whatnot. The farmers in South Carolina are hurting. There might be some individual farmers that specialize, and dairy farmers have been going away in this state since I was in the state legislature, folks. Most of your milk comes from New Mexico or South Dakota. It's been on a truck for a long time before it gets to your grocery store, and that's why it doesn't last very long. If there's a farmer that needs to talk to my office, please give me a call, 202-225-5301, 202-225-5301. Give me a call in Washington and let us work on this for you. If you're in agriculture and you're affected by the tariffs, let us work for it. I haven't heard anybody contact me like Greenfield has and Seneca Mixed Machine Tools about the issue. So I'm willing to take this agnostic approach, a wait and see, because I really believe that things are going to move in the right direction for America because this president understands it. He's been talking about these things for 30 plus years.
Sure.
And now he has the ability to implement them. And I think the American people are gravitating there, did gravitate toward that, and are standing behind him on this.
How would you rate President Trump as a president? I can remember the primaries, the elections, the whole bit, and everybody had a lot of questions. As you look at what he's done, how would you rate him as a president?
From an economic standpoint and a national security standpoint, I would give him an A. From a communication standpoint, I'd probably give him a C at this point. He can do things better to communicate. But there again, I didn't elect a communicator. I elected a guy that was commander-in-chief, somebody that could turn this economy around and work with Congress to strengthen our military, rebuild our economy, put Americans to work, lower our taxes, secure our borders. And he has been laser-like focused on national security issues, on economic issues, on national security with the military issues. I mean, have you heard the word ISIS in a while? I haven't. They're decimated. They're on the run. All the territory they had in Iraq and Syria is gone. They're small pockets. And that was because of a laser-like focus of our president and turning over the military reins to General Mattis, saying, we're going to end this. And so he's done that. He's focused on the southern border right now because he understands that's the weak underbelly of this nation that can be exploited by people that want to do great harm to the country.
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for him since they are getting a new president down there, too, in Mexico, too. Show where they're going.
Yeah, I think the Americans that voted for President Trump saw that. They appreciate what he's doing, and they would give him high marks in those areas. He was on the European tour with NATO and whatnot before he went to Russia, to Helsinki, before he had that press conference and all that. He was tired, and I get that. And he misspoke and didn't have a stellar performance, and he was criticized by the mainstream media. And, if you look at the past statements by Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, John McCain, Barack Obama, and others, they were very similar to what the president had said, and some were even a little more friendly with Vladimir Putin than Donald J. Trump was. But yeah, he was vilified because people believe that he colluded with Putin and Russia to steal this election from a very bad candidate, Hillary Clinton. There's been zero evidence of any collusion. Robert Mueller right now, they've got a court case against Manafort. It's all on tax evasion and other things. It has zero to do with collusion with Trump. He just happened to hold a job for a couple of months during the convention time with the Trump campaign. I've seen zero evidence. I'm not saying that it's not out there and they'll find something. If they do, I'll be the first one to stand up and criticize. But I've seen
zero.
How
much longer should this Mueller investigation go on?
Well, that's up to the Attorney General.
No, I mean, well, our Attorney General seems to be MIA a lot of times.
Yeah, I think some other things are going on behind the scenes, I hope. I read a lot that indicate that. There's a bunch of sealed indictments around the country, and we'll see. I told Jeff Sessions recently, he came and spoke to a Republican study committee, and I had to go up into the rotunda and take a picture with a constituent. I was coming down the back way to that room, and the Attorney General was leaving by that way I was coming, by the back way under the Capitol. And I said, hey, General Jeff, I knew him. I visited with him when he was a senator. And I said, I'm Jeff Duncan. He said, I know you, Jeff. And I said, look, I'm going to tell you real briefly that the folks in my district want to see somebody in an orange jumpsuit real soon because they believe that some folks violated the law. And that was during the FISA warrant. That was during the text messages, all the other things that showed there was collusion within the DOJ and the FBI to keep an American who was aspiring to be president of the United States from achieving that goal.
And what did he say? That's not my problem. I backed off of that. I'm not involved in that.
He grinned, and he and his detail walked on. So he I don't remember.
No comment. No comment.
But he heard from me on your behalf.
Okay. All right. Hey, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. We'll be right back. I hope if you've got a question, you'll pick up that phone. Give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We are fired up and ready to go. I want to talk about Space Force when we come back. I got a few other questions. And by the way, did you know that Congressman Jeff Duncan got the 2017 Freedom Fighter Award?
Yeah, that's me. I'm a freedom fighter. I love
All
freedom.
Right.
And liberty.
We'll be right back. Don't you go away. The antique vintager has arrived at 637 Durst Avenue East in Greenwood, South Carolina. How can you reach such a wizard? Just by calling 864-229-6613. Make your appointment today at The Antique Vintager. And don't forget to check out his new website, The Antique Vintager Emporium. Simply amazing! Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Lots of conversation going on about a lot of different issues here. And I'm going to bring this one thing up, Jeff. I had hoped to have this article that I read in the Wall Street Journal. In fact, I did a whole show about it, about the IRS rehiring employees that had been let go and that, quote, they didn't have the information. The hiring people didn't know what the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. And the low number of turnover that they have in the IRS, Jeff was talking, the percentages certainly should be higher. Well, I read the article. I talked about it. I must have tossed it, gone back trying to find it out of the Wall Street Journal, and the article appears to have disappeared. It's not there.
Fake news. They
from the Wall Street Journal.
That just shows you everybody's in this fake news game, I guess.
But I did notice. I did notice that you guys up there in Washington, the Ensuring the Integrity of the IRS Workforce Act of 2018. You guys passed this,
right?
Right. And the commissioner may not hire an individual previously employed by the commission who was removed for misconduct under the subchapter, blah, 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 or whose employment was terminated under section, blah, blah, blah. So the bill was put forward in the last Congress and passed the House then as well, but ultimately failed to become law. And similar legislation has been introduced.
I wonder why.
To
I guess
Senate.
The guy sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue never signed the bill and maybe vetoed it or whatnot. So that was directly related to Lois Lerner and what we saw, weaponization of the IRS to go after conservative
yes.
groups, and all the hearings that Gowdy and Company had resulted in that bill. and Christy Noem's on Ways and Means. It kind of came through Ways and Means. It was the right thing. So, you know, if you were let go for negligence, malfeasance, or whatever, and
one of the things said that the person got a total of like 30 or 40 days of sleeping on the job.
Yeah.
And they finally got him out, and then they hired him back.
Yeah, that's egregious. That's a violation of our trust in government, and of course our tax dollars are paying his salary. So
yeah, but it was that type of thing. Some had records.
So, it's very different. Let me just say this: it's very difficult to fire a government employee at the federal level. You look at what's happened in the VA, and I have actually had to pass legislation to give the VA the ability to fire certain workers that were negligent, because we're talking about our veterans here that need the utmost care. We got VA centers, VA hospitals to try to provide for them because it's the right thing to do. But then you have negligence. And we remember what happened during the Bush administration when a lot of this this stuff, paint peeling off the walls, and the VA secretary was fired and whatnot. The days of Brian Dorn are over. Brian would never have let that kind of VA happen. But to fire those employees for the Secretary of the VA was very, very difficult, even under the
Obama administration. It's hard to fire anybody across the board, isn't it?
It really is, and it shouldn't be that way. If you don't live up to do the job, if you've got malfeasance, if you've stolen, if you slept on the job, which is theft, because you're not working, you're stealing that salary, you ought to be let go, period.
Exactly. Now, just as far as all that goes, with this new tax program, since our taxes will be filed on a much smaller sheet of paper, does that mean that we'll be able to get rid of some of these IRS agents?
That is the goal, to shrink the IRS and make tax filing easier. And, you know, you ought to be able to file on a postcard. That was the ultimate goal. And, you know, we don't need a huge IRS. It should be a lot simpler than it is.
Now, do you think that's going to happen, though?
We'll see.
He's waffling on me, folks.
Nope. If I had my druthers, they'd be gone out the door. But, you know, as we just mentioned, it's tough to fire employees. So probably what's going to happen is, based on attrition, as these people retire, they won't be replaced.
Yeah, exactly. You know, another question. I can remember being in Washington and seeing all these buildings that the government owns not being used. Has any movement been made on selling them, leasing them, letting other people use them if the government's not using them?
Some of them are not owned, but they're leased, and they have leases, but they're not needed anymore, but we're still paying the lease until the lease is up. But at the same time, I've taken people to the back of the United States Capitol on the Speaker's balcony, and one thing I've done in the last 8 years, and it was probably more prevalent in 11, 12, 13, is I've said, let's just stop for a minute and count the number of construction cranes that we can see from this vantage point. And we've counted them up to 24 huge construction cranes.
Sure.
And they've looked at me and, has he lost his mind? Why are you asking us to do that? And here's the reason. We didn't see construction cranes in 2011, 2012 in Charlotte or Orlando or Nashville or Greenville or Charleston or Columbia. With the exception of college campuses, we saw some construction cranes on college campuses. You didn't see it because the economy had slowed way down. But where you did see 24 construction cranes were in the Washington area, because government was growing under the last administration at record paces, and everything to support government, that is the office buildings, the apartment buildings, the government buildings, were going gangbuster. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen quite as much. Now what you see is the normal number of cranes that you would see in a growing city where the economy is doing very, very well in Northern Virginia.
But the buildings that the government, I mean, they could reduce some of that.
Yeah, I'd have to look for buildings that you're talking about that are sitting vacant. If they're sitting vacant, you know, we challenge GO to get out of the lease and pay the penalty or sell the buildings.
Sell the building.
And the best way the GO could sell the building.
Prime real estate that they have there.
Best thing the GO, because it is prime real estate and high demand, the best thing the GO could do is hire a qualified professional auctioneer to go in there and sell it for the highest price that they can obtain.
You don't happen to know.
I don't do that anymore, so I don't profit. I can say that. I still believe in the auction method, folks. We're going to bring buyers and sellers together. We're going to make the buyers compete against each other in an open, transparent environment and achieve the highest price. It works.
Yep, it works. Maybe we should do that more in government.
We should. We absolutely should.
Hey, who's going to give me the lowest bid for this contract right here? There you go.
That's fine.
Reverse auctions. All right. You recently went out to Yucca Mountain. You, of course, want to get this nuclear waste out of South Carolina. What's happening?
Nuclear waste is sitting on 121 sites around the United States. That's non-defense commercial waste. Then we also have defense waste sitting at Savannah River site in Hanford and Idaho Flats and other places. So you're talking about defense and non-defense waste. Oconee Nuclear Station, V.C. Sumner, has waste sitting in either in a pool or in dry cast storage on the lakes of on the shores of Lake Kiawe or the shores of Lake Monticello. The goal was to move that commercial waste to a long-term safe repository. In the 1980s, they searched high and low, found a geologically ideal site called Yucca Mountain. And the law of the land, a bill was passed through Congress and signed by the president to build the repository there for this waste. They started working on the construction process to pay for it in the bill. They decided to charge not taxpayers, but ratepayers a percentage in your bill, maybe pennies at a time, but a percentage of your utility bill went for the construction and operation of Yucca Mountain. South Carolina ratepayers have paid over $1.3 billion, not tax dollars, but in your utility bill, $1.3 billion for the construction and operation of Yucca Mountain. Then Barack Obama and Harry Reid decided that they didn't want to do that. They would rather that nuclear waste sit on the shores of Lake Kiawe and the shores of Lake Monticello and at Savannah Riverside. So they mothballed it. Went in one day, cut the funding off, and cut the lights off. And I went out there. It's a national solution to a national problem. It's an ideal site. It's in the middle of nowhere, guys. Nevada, it's dry, it's arid. In fact, it's in the middle of property where we exploded our nuclear weapons when we were testing them before we dropped the bomb on Nagasaki and Hiroshima and many other air and below ground nuclear tests have happened out there on that site about 15 miles away from Yucca. Yucca is sitting there. I've been on the top of it, standing on the top of that mountain and thinking 1,000 feet down through this rock, and it's non-porous rock, 1,000 feet down, they're going to build a vault. The vault hadn't been built yet, just the tunnels to get to the vault. 5 miles worth of tunnels. That's how deep in the mountain.
Yeah, going into
5 miles. They're going to build a vault, and they're going to store this stuff in mainly glass form. Glass is hard to erode and hard to transmit, and it doesn't dissolve. And that glass is in stainless steel canisters. And those stainless steel canisters will be in concrete vault, which will be inside the non-porous rock vault, 1,000 feet from where any rain may fall. So a little bit of rain, and they get very little rain out there. But that little bit of rain has got to transit all through that 1,000 foot of rock, through that concrete, through that stainless steel, get on that glass, pick up some radioactivity, go back through the stainless steel, back through the concrete, back through another 1,000 feet of rock before it ever gets to any water table. It's an ideal site. It's a national solution to a national problem. If we can't put it there, we can't put it anywhere in the country. We will never find another site. We will never go through all the politics for this. And keep in mind, we ratepayers in South Carolina have invested over $1.3 billion, if you think interest and other, over $1.3 billion just from South Carolina, the small state that we are.
Right.
But we have nuclear power, so we contributed, right? $1.3 billion, and you know what we've got for our money? The construction and operation of Yucca Mountain. We've got a 5-mile-long tunnel that was bored through there, and that's it. So I'm working with John Shimkus, chairman of the Environment Subcommittee on the Energy and Commerce Committee, to actually get Yucca Mountain back on track. Now, we'll get through the elections. Dean Heller in the Senate from Nevada gets reelected. Maybe he'll back off his objection to this. We're trying to get some money back in there to crank it back up in some, even if it's smallest measurement, to keep this thing going because it's the right thing. Like I said, it's a national solution.
Well, how dangerous is to have it sitting around in all these different locations across our country?
Yeah, I mean, the shores of Lake Kiawe isn't an ideal spot for nuclear waste. 40 years worth, ladies and gentlemen. The Oconee Nuclear Station is almost 40 years old. V.C. Sumner is about the same, and sitting right on the Broad River. We have a fault line that runs through South Carolina. So things can happen. You got a huge amount of money spent just in securing this stuff. You know, you ever go to Oconee Nuclear Station, it's like Fort Knox. It's got it's more secure than the Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. I mean, it's amazing. We've got plutonium and highly radioactive waste sitting in glass form down at Savannah Riverside. In the same thing, dry cast storage in concrete under a metal building. This is the yucky stuff. This is when they made the plutonium, they had to erode everything or dissolve everything to get to the plutonium so they could take that little pit and put it in a nuclear weapon. But everything, the uranium and all the casing and everything, all this yucky stuff flowed into these steel tanks underground. And these steel tanks are starting to rust and starting to leak a little bit and going right on the shores of the Savannah River, yada, yada, yada. We got to get that stuff out. We got environmental management happening, get all that yucky stuff. Some of it's peanut butter-like paste. Some of it's more solid than that. Some of it's liquid.
Well, we're not the only ones that have this sitting here. Across, I mean, all stuff.
Hanford, Washington, where the first atomic weapon was built, as a cleanup site. Savannah Riverside's an ongoing mission site. In fact, the president's talked about revamping our nuclear weapons program. They will have new missions out there. They still do triggers and other things. There's a great lab out there. I could talk agnosium for Savannah Riverside. I'm very high on that. This stuff's sitting all over.
Yeah,
that's
so
defense waste.
Well, it is.
121 commercial sites.
And when we look about being concerned about our country being attacked, it is not real hard to figure out good places to attack, is it, Jeff?
You've heard of a dirty bomb, and they could get some of this waste or blow something up there and you know, and create a dirty bomb. They don't need a nuclear weapon if they can explode that stuff up in the atmosphere, and then that radiation spreads around.
You know, one of the other things that I'm always very curious about is, they talk about this sometimes, but not a lot, is about our national security, like on the grid, the grid, and they talk about whether we could withstand an attack, I mean, not an attack, but what it would do to shut everything down, because our grid is not really ready.
Yeah, we need to harden the grid. I'm on part of the EMP caucus, which is electromagnetic pulse that can come from a small nuclear weapon exploded high up in the atmosphere in space, sends down an EMP that would short-circuit all solid-state circuitry. So this radio station would go off there, and you wouldn't be able to use anything that I'm looking at right now because it'd all be fried, as would the wiring in your house, your vehicles, unless you have something built before 1984 with a carburetor and points and et cetera. All that would be fried. So transportation, electricity, refrigeration, keeping medicine safe.
Telephones? Folks, what about the phones?
Will
we still have our phones?
All communication, your phone shot. Folks, get some of your pictures that you love and print them out and put them in a binder somewhere so that you'll have them if something like that ever happens, and all your records and whatnot. But an EMP is a real threat because North Korea doesn't have to send a bomb over there. They just got to send one up in space over the United States somewhere and set it off. And then you've got an EMP that fries our grid and sets us back in the 1800s. And if you don't believe it, read a book called 1 Second After, set in Black Mountain, North Carolina. And it will give you a good indication of all the dominoes that fall when this happens. Cars shut down, refrigeration shuts down. If you're on insulin, there's only a limited amount of supply. You got to keep it cold. How are you going to do that? Once insulin's gone, then the diabetics die off as well. People that need any kind of
So what are we doing about it, Jeff? Drug.
So working to harden our grid, pushing the administration and the MP caucus to try to harden our grid.
Does the administration see that as something as important as
I think they do, but you know they've been distracted with some other things in their first 18 months in office, 19 months, whatever it is. And Congress has got to step up and put the funding there to harden the grid. But if you think about what's going on in South Carolina, Clemson University, along with Duke Energy and SCANA and SENG and others down in Charleston, have what's called the drivetrain test facility. And along with that, that's testing the drivetrains of windmills, right? The torque and power put out and gearing and that sort of thing. But they also have a area there to test any grid component, breakers, whatever. And they can zap it with all kinds of, it's not connected to the grid. So they can actually hit it with hacking. They can hit it with a pulse. they can, any kind of component, they can test before it's actually put on the grid. They can prove that it works or doesn't work right there with what Clemson University is doing at the drivetrain facility. And that's right near where the Hunley is, old naval base there. But Clemson's doing amazing things. And University of South Carolina is doing some stuff on cybersecurity and all that as well. So we've got two great universities here working on protecting and hardening our grid and making sure the systems are in place or are available. Now it's up to the government and utilities to actually put those systems in place to protect us against a cyber hack or against some sort of EMP. But the terrorists have tried to attack our grid. Well, let me back up. We've had natural EMP type events that have shut down the grid in the Northeast.
Correct.
And those are natural events, solar flares, you know, huge solar waves that have done exactly what a nuclear bomb could do. So we know it's a possibility, natural and unnatural. But we've seen the terrorists try to blow up, diesel fuel tanks. Diesel fuel doesn't explode, dummy. But they tried. It was a fire. So it didn't do anything. But if it had been a gasoline tank sitting there and it exploded, it probably would have hurt the grid, shut down Phoenix or somewhere out west. They're trying it physically to hurt our grid. You know, our adversaries are trying it through the internet and hacking to try to shut down the grid or attack our grid. And then we also have Rocket Man over there trying to get a nuclear weapon, Iran trying to get a nuclear weapon, and they could do it. The EMP do probably more damage, be able to come in here and nothing would be destroyed other than us. With an EMP. So it's a real threat.
What do you think about what's happening with North Korea? Do you believe that they are denuclearizing? I mean, there's a lot of different information out there.
Well, they did start dismantling one of their test facilities, but it's such a closed society, just like Iran, and we know that their weapons program, their military have secret bases in the mountains, in tunnels and whatnot. So unless you have true inspection, which we don't in Iran, because you have to give them 24 days notice before you come, not 24 hours, folks, 24 days.
Who would ever vote for do or put something like that in place? I'm sorry, if you're going to inspect something, you need access.
What a crazy Iran nuclear deal.
But anyways, Korea.
As long as they're closed societies, you don't have true inspections and don't have true
verification. Do you think it's going to go
verification
anywhere?
Look, I have hope on North Korea.
Okay.
You know, when I saw Kim Jong-un cross the DMZ into South Korea and vice versa, and those guys actually sitting down and talking the first time in 70 years, it gives me hope. They've retreated from some of their past statements, but he's also a politician, has a constituency in North Korea. He's got to placate and got a bunch of old hardline communists within his regime that may not like what he said, and he's got to keep them from overthrowing him, a coup for happening. He's got to talk big on one hand.
Doesn't he just kill him if he doesn't like him?
He's very effective at that. But here's what excites me about North Korea. If North Korea opens up and South Koreans can actually go visit with North Koreans, family, bloodline, whatever, the Christian nation, Christian world has spent a lot of treasure evangelizing in South Korea, and there's a huge Christian nation in South Korea. And as those South Korean Christians can travel north, they can take the word of Jesus Christ with them. And I'm excited about what God may do on the Korean Peninsula in an area that has not had any sort of access to a Bible. If you take a Bible there, you can go to jail and be killed, you know, it's contraband. But if the wall comes down, like we saw the Iron Curtain come down in Europe, and South Koreans can travel north based on the evangelical efforts of Christians, then they can carry God's word there and share the love of Jesus with their relatives or friends or anyone else up there. That's a world changer. That's a world changing event on the Korean Peninsula, and that's what I have hope for. I can't wait to see how God uses that.
Well, we did get back 55. Looks like we got back 55 bodies and remains. And, of course, they're in the process of
70 years, and we hadn't been able to get simple things like the remains of fallen U.S. soldiers, men and women from over there. Now we're seeing that. These are positive steps that are happening. Trump gets zero credit from the mainstream media on this, but they don't even want to show that when I talk about the Mueller probe or something. But these are good things that are happening. And they're just not willing to give them credit for anything. They're not giving them credit for the robust economic growth. They're not giving them credit for low unemployment. They don't even want to talk about that. They want to continue this witch hunt and this, you know, chasing ghost of a conspiracy theory and collusion, which we haven't seen. So,
you've had some meetings with Trump. I don't know if you had one-on-one, but in group meetings and everything, cameras aren't on and this type of thing.
He's a facetious. He's outgoing. He probably doesn't know your congressman's name.
Jeff Duncan, you mean.
Right. even though I've talked with him, I stood right behind the Resolute desk. I had my arm on the chair, and he was sitting there at his desk. I'm right beside him. I have had some amazing experiences there in the White House a few times. And then I brought Clemson, helped get Clemson right there, and all the things at the national champions. And hopefully we're going to get another visit there next spring. But with the Clemson Tigers. But I went to practice the other day. They look amazing, guys. Go Tigers. But you know, my interactions with Trump have been mainly watching from afar. You know, I've been to a bill signing and did a couple other things, but
well, he's had congressmen to the White House. I mean, yeah, have you been to any of those meetings? Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you just wonder, is he all business? Does he hear what you're saying? I mean, people say you know.
He's businesslike. He's positive. He's upbeat. He's not a negative guy. He's an optimist. He's going to do the deal. He's looking for a way to do the deal. He's looking for a way to get the closing table and sign the documents. I see that out of him. He's a very positive, energetic person. And
it's disappointing on the budget, though. The continuing resolution.
I was disappointed last year that, you know, we didn't fund the wall and he didn't stand firmly on that. And then
September's
here we are
coming up, though, right?
Back to a year, and his rhetoric and his words have been he's going to shut the government down over funding the wall. I challenge my colleagues in the House and the Senate, let's fund the wall. I mean, look, take Trump out of the equation. Take the fact that he promised this on the campaign. Take the very facts that border security is not all about illegal immigration. That's a big part. Don't get me wrong, but 49% of all illegals in this country didn't come across our southern border, folks. We gave them a pass to come. We gave them a visa, permission slip to come into this country, and they decided to stay. That's roughly half. But the border is as much about sex trafficking, drug trafficking, human trafficking, and ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and Boko Haram, and Abu Sayyaf, and the Quds Force of Iran, and all these that want to exploit the soft underbelly of this nation, and that is our unsecure southern border. They get Latin America, and they transit up through, just like the unaccompanied children. If a child can walk across a border, I guarantee a Quds Force operative from Iran can come across into this country, and they want to do great harm to America. They want to erode our freedoms, and they want to hurt you or kill you.
Well, we've seen that over and over.
And so I think this president gets it, that it's not all about border security. It isn't just about illegal immigration. That's part of it. Because once they get here, they get all of our taxpayer-provided services, et cetera, et cetera. But it is also about stopping drug trafficking, heroin, fentanyl, marijuana, meth. It's about stopping human trafficking. It's about stopping the sex trafficking that's going on. And it's about national security and thwarting the efforts of these bad actors that want to do great harm to you, Ann. Because you're a voice. You're practicing your First Amendment right here. They don't like that. They would rather shut you up because you have that freedom.
That's right. That's right. So as we move towards getting to the end of this, we've had a pretty good time here. I wanted to ask about Space Force.
Before we do that, I want to talk about the Faith and Freedom Barbecue on the 27th this month, my big fundraiser up in Anderson. You can go to jeffduncan.com, 6 o'clock. If you're a veteran or a first responder in law enforcement or first responders total, you and your family or my guests come for free. We'd love to honor you that way. We've got a great lineup. The governor's going to be there, Dave Bossy, Corey Lewis, Wendowski that helped President's campaign and have a neat perspective. Steve Amerson, America's Tenor, look him up on Facebook or others. Listen to him sing. He's going to come sing some patriotic and spiritual music. He's a great mentor of mine in Washington. I've gotten to know him over the years. Great event, August 27th, the Anderson Civic Center, 6 o'clock, jeffduncan.com, the 8th Annual Faith and Freedom Barbecue. Now we can talk about the Space Force.
I want to let you do that at the end, but go ahead. Talk about
Jim Bridenstine is head of NASA and is heavily involved in this. This is a Top Gun pilot. This is a guy that we became very, very close friends when he was in Congress. I'm happy he finally got confirmed by the Senate. But so the president's talked about Space Force as the new frontier and what that looks like, how much it's going to cost, something we're going to have to think long and hard how we pay for it, what benefits may come out.
$20 million to kick it off or something, is that right?
Yeah, we'll see where that money comes from, whether you shift it from the NASA budget on other things or whether you add to it. I don't know.
Do we need something like this, Jeff? New.
You know, I think it's kind of groovy to think about.
Groovy?
I really do. I mean, are these individual guys with space packs on floating around with some sort of laser weapons?
Space,
or are we talking about
guns?
X-Wing fighters and TIE fighters?
We're talking about space balls here,
yeah,
aren't we?
It's crazy. You know, it's all new, and look, I love sci-fi stuff. I'm big on that. And
but is it? I mean, some discussion has been the importance of it just for national security to be able to secure the all the stuff that we have up there that's bouncing information back here.
The satellite securities.
Yes,
and we do know China and Russia have worked on whether they have the capability. I don't know right off. Worked on the ability to take our satellites out with these Hunter satellites they've got. They can move around and actually dismantle our satellites and disrupt our communication and GPS and other things. And so we get a lot of... Did you just write the Jetsons on there? Really?
Yes, I did.
We get a lot of benefit from space research. You think about, you know, the things that we've benefited in cell phones and others.
So we can communicate, isn't it? I mean, all of that is coming up from
us. And we understand what President Reagan was able to do with Star Wars and that, and it basically bankrupted the Russians. And is that what Trump has, a broader picture of forcing the Russians and the Chinese to divert resources to compete with us in that arena? I don't know. You know, that's something you kind of look back on and see the results of. And I don't know that I support the Space Force. I said groovy. I do. I like the thought process, but we're $22 trillion in debt, too. And then where's the money going to come from to pay for that? And is there enough benefit for the expense? And
how long will it take to bring it online?
What are we talking about? Are we talking about new rockets? Are we talking about a new shuttle program? Are we talking about just training individuals in case they've got to go up there and dismantle an adversary satellite or something? Are we talking about putting a base on the moon? I don't know. You know, I think it's all of the above, maybe. Or maybe it's just beginning the thought process. I have no idea. But, you know, in my mind, I see X-Wing fighters. I see Death Stars. I see TIE fighters. I see the Millennium Falcon. I see that.
I see space balls.
I don't know about space balls. You know?
The movie. You're listening to WZRS.
It's a great movie, too.
Yeah, it is. And then I was thinking about the Jetsons and all the new stuff that they were creating. And, you know, is this going to
be... The best thing about the Jetsons is the sound of the little ship as it... Because it flies,
yeah, flies by, part. Yes, exactly.
And Daughter Judy was hot, I guess, too. So,
okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. We'll go just a couple more questions here. You filed a couple of new bills that you're kind of passionate about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you like to talk about those for a minute?
We can talk about whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So. Well, Old Glory Act.
So, would you be happy with the Gadsden flag flying underneath the United States flag at a U.S. embassy overseas?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But what we've seen is, you know, the antithesis of that is the rainbow flag actually flying, making a political statement about gay rights, flying underneath the U.S. flag at our embassies and consulates around the world. And this goes back to 2012 during Gay Pride Week. The Obama administration wanted to kind of push this agenda item out there around the world and try to force some of these countries to start accepting gay rights movement. They actually initiated some of the gay rights parade, you know, during Gay Pride Week in places like Malta and Belize and other places. And so they flew the rainbow flag underneath the United States Stars and Stripes. I just disagree with making a political statement through our State Department and on the flagpole of our embassies. I think when Americans and others look at our embassy, all they need to see is the U.S. flag, the Stars and Stripes. So this is a mandate to the State Department not to fly anything but Old Glory on the flagpole. And if the individuals in the State Department on their own time time and on dime want to push certain political agendas in other countries, that's fine. Doesn't deny that. And it doesn't deny military bases from being able to fly their service flags or POW flags or whatever at military installations. This only applies to embassies and consulates where we only need to see the American flag. And honestly, on Facebook, when I put it out there, I kind of did a three-part series, kind of a bait type thing to let people think through this process before we got to the real issue and put a picture up of the real flag that flew there. I had a lot of the liberal trolls that come on my Facebook and comment actually agree with me. So it should be nonpartisan. It should be a non-issue, really, Old Glory only. Second bill is Eliminate Foreign Intervention in Our Elections Act. It has nothing to do with Russia and China and Iran and North Korea all trying to hack and persuade people to vote a certain way and involved in our elections. It has everything to do with the fact that cities in Maryland and California are allowing non-American citizens, illegal aliens, to vote in their school board elections.
Yes.
I don't think in Greenwood, South Carolina, we would want illegal aliens to vote in our elections here. Is it school board today, city council tomorrow, county council next year, state house, general assembly elections, and then federal elections? You know, if you get them
well,
in the door.
How do you actually divide it? How do you say, oh, you can only vote in this one?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, yeah, I think that's a...
It should be a no-brainer, right? And, we can't get voter ID. One way to stop all of it is just be an American citizen and have a picture ID that we can provide you that show that you are who you say you are and in voter fraud. But short of this, just to stop any government funding from going to these cities that are allowing illegal aliens to vote in their elections, I just don't think that's right. Well, I can't go to France and vote in their elections.
No.
Or Canada, even.
Right. Exactly. Well, you are, this has been a good conversation here today.
Yeah.
We talked about a lot of different issues.
We covered a lot.
We cover a lot.
We even covered the Faith and Freedom Barbecue on August 27th.
Jeff Duncan. August 27th, in case you didn't get that. August 27th.
The last Monday of the month. Yeah.
Yes. And
JeffDuncan.com.
And you are going to, just out of curiosity, why did you choose Corey Lewandowski and Bossy? What's his first name?
Dave Bossy.
They've written books.
Yeah, they've written a book. They were involved in helping the Trump campaign as a senior advisor and campaign manager. Dave and I are friends. As we were looking around thinking about, well, our first choice was Mike Pence, the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still my first choice. Mike, come on, I want to hear from you.
Come on now, Mike, come on down.
But we could never get an answer out of the White House and the vice president's office on that. And so just brainstorming as a staff, campaign staff that handles this, thought about Bossy and then thought, well, when we called Dave, he said, well, what about Corey, too? We wrote this book together and we both can kind of get on stage. And I said, man, that'd be great. Let's talk about, you know, Make America Great Agenda. Let's talk about, you know, the campaign. Let's talk about the White House. Let's talk about what was being done. Let's talk about the mainstream media. Let's talk about how you guys were attacked
they're still being attacked.
So, yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. And so... they're coming, and I'm excited about that. But I'm just as excited about Jeff Landry, the Attorney General from Louisiana, coming. He's one of my best friends. He's called me since I've been here, people love him. And he's bringing a state perspective on federalism and the role of the states and how they're combating the federal government's intrusion in the states and what he's been able to do since he's been there. And I'm just as excited about the Carolina Boys singing again before the event, before dinner. But then Steve Amerson, is known as America's Tenor, has a great ministry. He comes on his own dime from California twice a month, every 2 weeks, walks the halls of Congress and just visits with us in the hallway and prays with us and leaves an inspirational notes in our office if he misses us. And then I've had the great fortune of leading after hour tours of the Capitol at 9 o'clock at night. Steve's involved with a thing called the Jefferson Gathering, which is a Wednesday night church service in the Capitol downstairs in the basement. But afterwards they come up to the rotunda, nobody in the Capitol, just almost empty, and Steve will bring them up and he will sing in the rotunda.
Oh, wow.
And when
the
you
acoustics.
Hear when you hear him sing at my Faith and Freedom Barbecue, the 8th annual one, you will realize what I'm saying. He's got an amazing voice. And when he sings How Great Thou Art or Amazing Grace in the rotunda and the sound reverberates in there, it is unbelievable. He's also been in 187 movies with his voice. He does voiceover and characters. Hunt for an October, he spoke Russian in there. It's just, that's one movie I can think of off the top of my head, but just a great guy, and I wanted him to be a part of this because he's been such an instrumental part of my life and my walk with the Lord in Washington and keeping me grounded. So I look forward to introducing him. We got the governor coming. We got Katie Arrington from Charleston coming that won the congressional seat down there, the release of nominee. We got William Timmons coming. We've got most of the constitutional offices. Their people are coming. It's going to be a great evening. Faith and Freedom, we're going to focus on. And you can find out more at jeffduncan.com, August 27th, Anderson Civic Center. And if you're a veteran or a first responder, you're coming as my treat. And I'd love to have you there. Love to honor you that way. And hopefully Ann Hill will come. You can broadcast there. I'd be glad to do an interview. And it's just a great event. 8th annual event, so it's grown. We've had well over 2,000 people there in the past. Probably anticipate over 1,000 people there this time.
Absolutely. Sounds like a great event. Make sure you check it out at jeffduncan.com. Jeff Duncan, it is always my pleasure to have you on the radio. Thanks for spending time with us this morning.
Absolutely, and thanks. And you showed me a picture earlier. A year ago today, 10th of August, I was sitting right here. It hadn't been a year since I've been there, but I was here last year, a year ago. That's kind of ironic,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Maybe we'll make it an annual thing. On
August 10th is Ann Eller and Jeff Duncan Day.
There you go. I love it. But thank you for what you do. God bless you. And thank you, listeners, for listening to Ann's show and listening to me rant and rave today. So it's great. Look forward to seeing you around the district.
All right. And he's off. He's going to be at Hill Talk 11:30 today at the Inn on the Square. I think meet and greet at 11:30, 12 o'clock is lunch, and you'll be the guest speaker. So I'm sure you'll be filling them in with a lot of good information. That's going to do it for us. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. Bye-bye, everybody.